Hello and welcome to Linoleum Knife.
Hello and welcome to Linoleum Knife.
After dark.
After dark.
Did you like make a list of most irritating things that you could do? Or does this stuff just come natural to you? Because you're that much of a twit.
That was spontaneous.
Oh, God. You got a million of them.
I do.
Anyway, it's Linoleum Knife After Dark because we usually tape this show in the afternoon, but it's the evening because this week's crazy. You get two shows from us.
Right.
This is our Saturday night show about the new movies that opened this week and my...
Yes, we're home.
Yeah,
on a Saturday night.
Yeah, because we're losers.
Do you know what's happening tonight that we could have gone to?
Lots of things, but what?
James Franco has, along with Gus Van Sant, he has...
Is that tonight?
Yes, he has recut... Okay.
My own all these Private
outtakes
Idaho.
And snippets from My Own Private Idaho into his own movie called My Own Private River.
Right.
And it's at the Gagosian Gallery.
Yes, in Beverly Hills through April. Something.
Tonight, yeah. But that's not where we are.
No. We are at
and
home.
We're at home.
But I saw James Franco.
We're going to go to that,
at a
though.
Distance.
We are going to that. We're going to sit there for 2 hours and we're going to watch it.
Yeah.
Because... And I honestly, going to the opening would not have been a great idea because I would have seen people that I know, you know, art people, but we wouldn't have been able to pay any attention to them.
I think the opening actually was last night because...
No, it said it was... The website said today.
Well, let me get all... Can I get all name-droppy?
Do it.
Greg Araki told me that he went last night.
Oh, that must have been like the...
Maybe that was the pre...
That might have been the fancy...
La-di-da.
Sometimes that happens.
Okay.
Well, fancy people get their own...
He went to the fancy people opening, I guess.
Because it said it opens today on the website.
And he said basically there's two rooms where these video installations are set up.
Yes.
That are like, I guess, 6 hours each. Or maybe one room is for that and the other room is for the Michael Stipe thing.
I don't know.
But apparently, apart from that, there was
a 12-hour long thing.
Yeah, but I can't
watch 12 hours.
Yeah, but he said that apart.
I'll watch the 24-hour Christian Markley.
Yeah,
movie
I'm sure you
if
will.
If it comes here
in shifts, he said that apart from the video installations, though, there's not a lot to the exhibition. That it's mainly just the video stuff.
Yeah, well, Gus Van Sant has paintings.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Photos. Okay.
Yeah. And
we will check that out. I do want to see it. And
yeah.
We'll report back here on that.
And that 24 hour Christian Markley movie has to come to Los Angeles.
I would think it would. Yeah,
it has to come,
like The Hammer or something.
Mocha or The Hammer. Somebody has to show that thing. I would figure out a way to watch it in shifts.
And
it's called The Clock, and it's been playing at the Paula Cooper Gallery in New York for the past like month or something. And to standing room only crowds, apparently, even in the middle of the night, is what I hear.
It's a 24-hour film installation where basically for every minute of the day, they have a clip from a movie where somebody either says the time or shows
or
a clock.
Is that time.
Yeah.
And whatever time you're watching it
is the time
that
the
it's
movie.
On in the movie.
Yeah.
That's
so awesome.
Rad.
Really, that does sound exciting. I'm not as arty as you are, but that sounds like...
No, you're not.
That sounds something I'd really enjoy.
You're totally not.
And you are Dave White, film critic of movies.com, because we still haven't introduced ourselves.
And I'm artier than Alonzo Duralde, who is the DVD editor at movieline.com and the author of dozens of movie books that are all about movies.
Two books.
Two dozen movie books.
No. Two books and maybe none other ever, who knows?
Well, there'll be more.
Really?
You're an author of books, and that's your job is to keep authoring books.
But it's expensive.
It's not supposed to be expensive for us.
I lose money on this every time.
Well, you lost money because you hired a $6,000 publicist last year,
you know,
to help you promote the Christmas book.
Yeah,
plus, the Christmas book eventually is going to be, you know, sort of like a if it stays in print, it'll pay for itself.
A perennial, like It's a Wonderful Life.
If it stays in print, and we're hoping that it does, it'll pay for itself because, you know, it'll sell more and it'll come out every year. And
I hope so.
You know, you'll work it every year.
Your mouth to Santa's ear.
Yes.
We'll see if that happens. So. But anyway, so this week we're going to talk about...
Stupid movies.
New out this week in theaters, Hall Pass from the Farrelly Brothers, starring Owen Wilson and Jason Sudeikis, and Drive Angry 3D with Nicolas Cage and...
Oh, sorry, I just yawned. And not because of Drive Angry, because that
Nicolas
was actually...
Nicolas Cage and Amber Heard.
Amber Heard.
So, Hall Pass.
Okay, do we talk about the... All right, Hall Pass. Yeah. Sure, Hall Pass. You start. I'm having a thing here.
Yeah, Hall Pass. Okay, so basically it's a male menopause movie about two frustrated...
two men who are not old enough to have male menopause yet.
I guess. It's made by men with male menopause.
It's a Viagra movie is what it is. It's a middle-aged Viagra movie.
Yeah. So these two guys, and they're sort of unhappily married, or at least they're...
They love their wives.
Yeah, but
they're
like, you know, they commit the cardinal sin of looking at other women's asses. Right,
this is Well, you tell the plot.
Yeah, and so basically their wives decide they each give them a hall pass, a 1 week off from being married. And so the guy's like, hey, great. They think they're going to go out and get laid and stuff. But of course they are like boring middle-aged golfers. And so they have lost whatever game they had. And the honeys are not exactly falling in their lap. And meanwhile, the wives go out to the Cape and get hit on by like baseball players and stuff. So,
because it's Jenna Fisher and Christina Applegate,
right? Yeah, exactly. Because they're
up all naturally, sexy,
super
like
hot chicks,
like sexy moms. You know,
like Jenna Fisher has one moment at the beginning of the film where she looks like harried, dark circles under the eyes, not sleeping young mother. But then the rest of the film, she's like super dewy and
cute.
Yeah.
Which is how she is.
Is, I'm sure. Yeah. Anyway, it's stupid, and it's not even like fun, smart, stupid. It's just, it's a movie that is supposed to sort of be about the human condition, but doesn't understand it in the slightest, apparently. The Farrelly brothers, who, you know, once gave us great movies like There's Something About Mary, clearly have sort of... They don't have a strong feel for the story. The sort of shock moments that you expect from them feel like, oh, I guess we have to do some shock moments, you know. But they're not even all that shocking. I mean, I think like the world has...
I've seen poop splatter a whole bunch of places.
Yeah,
now.
The world has...
I've seen all the Jackass movies.
The Jackass movies have moved us way past whatever the bodily fluid gags that the Farrelly brothers have. I mean, like it is not 1999. You are not going to that the semen gag from There's Something About Mary is not going to have... If you did it now, it wouldn't have the same like crazy shock value and like entertainment value that it did then, because the world has moved on. But
yeah,
they have
because
not.
Someone in Jackass already drank
horse semen,
and then what's his face, Tom Green, like licked a bloody femur and Freddy got fingered.
Yeah,
you know,
like humped a dead moose or
and humps a dead animal. You know, like everything that you can think to do has kind of been.
You have to take it to solo territory, I think.
Right.
And that's just like most audiences are not going to follow you there. So, yeah, so this movie just felt just airless. Like there were some laughs, but very few and far between.
A couple times.
Yeah, but just.
It didn't decide what it was. And
you
it
know
couldn't
that,
decide what it was. And it couldn't even tell if it believed in its own
premise
thing or not.
And it's one of those movies where, you know, like it flirts with the idea of subverting the paradigm of like monogamy or traditional marriage setups, and then of course running screaming from it the way most Hollywood movies do. The joke I told Dave after the movie was over was like, if you explained the plot of this movie to somebody in France, they'd be like, I don't get it. You know, it promises that it's going to be sort of bawdy or outrageous or daring, but it ultimately very provincial and safe.
Yeah, what did we see a few days after? Oh, after a couple days after Hall Pass, we saw the new Abbas Kiarostami movie, Certified Copy. And there's a moment in that movie where Juliette Binoche is talking to an older Italian woman in a cafe. It's an older Italian woman who works there, and she's just drying the glasses, and she thinks that Juliette Binoche is married to the man that she's been hanging out with in this cafe, and she's not. They know each other, and the woman behind the counter is like, you know, oh, the men, they do this, they do that. And I can tell he's a good husband.
They just care about their jobs.
They care about their jobs and they care about their mistresses and blah, blah, blah. And it's just sort of like a matter of fact thing that she says. And Juliette Binoche is like, oh, you know, yeah, sure, you're right. You know, like this whole thing. And you're like, wait a second. if you said that on Oprah.
Right.
Everyone would be on stage. Yes. They'd be beating you over the head with the chairs in the studio audience because that's not, it's very specific, I think, to us in this country that sort of like.
Yeah, this was a thing that was not founded by like the Puritans, the people who were kicked out of Europe for being too boring.
And to that,
the founders of this country. And
I don't know what it's like out there.
Centuries later, we are still tying ourselves in knots about sex.
I don't know what the real world out there is like or not. You know, that sentence didn't come out right. What I want to say is that at the beginning of the movie, Jenna Fischer and Christina Applegate are seriously harshing on these guys for looking at other women and for masturbating and for like enjoying porn on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, and
how dare they?
And I'm thinking, the Farrelly brothers wrote this movie and they are men. So if they were being honest, what they would have said and what they would have allowed these male characters to experience and get across to the people in their lives is that men think about sex and men think about food. And that's kind of all that men think about. Sex and food.
Right.
If I'm not talking about movies for work, I'm thinking about sex or food. Like, where is the next amount of that coming from in my life? And so never once does the movie let these guys off the hook. In fact, I'm just going to spoil it. At the end, it's this very like typical, oh, I love my wife and I'm lucky to have her and I deserve, you know, whatever scraps she throws me. And I'm not saying, oh, boo-hoo, poor, you know, heterosexual middle-aged men, but geez.
No, like, shut up.
If that's the best you're supposed to get from your life, then you might as well just kill yourself right now. if you're a straight dude and you take your wife or girlfriend to see this movie, you're going to endure 2 hours of being scolded for having a penis.
Yeah, this is not a good advertisement for heterosexuality, for sure. And I was going to say something before when you were talking about, oh, well, the other sort of spoilery thing, as long as we're getting into that, is the only people in this movie that do have sex outside of marriage are literally,
they wind up in the ER,
physically punished for it. Like, yeah, they are
injured
because of it. It's like,
an injury is funny, and I get that with the Farrelly brothers, but no one, I guarantee you, no one sat back and thought, oh, wait, we're punishing. We're physically punishing the people
the transgressors,
who have
yeah.
sex
it's
in this
ridiculous.
Movie.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So yeah, stinky movie. Do not go see.
Except for the last
yes.
90 seconds or so.
The Stephen Merchant's bit under
Stephen
the closing
Merchant,
credits.
Stephen Merchant, that tall, blonde British dude that hangs with Ricky.
He's the co-creator Ricky of the Gervais. Original The Office, and he's on the Ricky Gervais show.
Right. There is a brilliantly funny, insane, energetic, black, dark, you know, humored sequence that plays over the credits.
Yeah, under the closing credits. And it's the best thing in the movie.
It's the best thing in the movie. It's really funny. And it makes you wish that the entire movie had been about him or something.
Or it had that same sense of manic, you know, energy.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, the movie's, it's ugly. Like, Matthew Leonetti, who's, you know, has shot some okay-looking movies, this one just looks awful. Like, everyone's badly lit. Owen Wilson particularly comes off really badly. Like, his face has never been this... had this many
pinchy looking
planes in it, you know. It's just bleh.
Yeah. Bleh, bleh.
Bleh. That's what we get. Too bleh.
Too bleh.
So yeah. So Drive Angry.
Was kind of good.
Was kind of good. Yeah. I was kind of surprised.
I mean, it's not good.
It's not.
It's super uneven and it
doesn't have the manic
down.
Energy
yeah.
that it ought to
you
have.
You want it
throughout.
To be a lot crazier than it is from start to finish. And it starts off strong. And
kind of putters at the end.
Yeah, but it has moments of excitement.
Yeah, like, even towards the end, there's
reasonably well paced throughout the film. Like it gives you enough.
Yeah.
So that the down moments don't feel like they're just sucking you into a
It's very sort of 70s in that it's kind of that 70s brand of occulty stuff.
Right.
And that...
It's even got a Race with the Devil sort of Winnebago
RV in it. Yeah. And it's got like great 70s muscle cars. And I have to say, it's like, I'm not a car guy, but...
But you will become one if
I miss the 70s muscle cars. Like
when they're great cars.
When they unveil the Chevelles, the SSs, I used to love them. I used to think those cars were so boss.
They are. They are boss, and that's why they're in this movie.
Yeah, there's like a Dodge Charger.
People from hell know what kind of cars they want.
Absolutely. So that was really cool. And William Fichtner. I love William Fichtner.
He takes the whole movie. He steals the whole movie away from him. He's really funny
Because it's like, if you're going to be in a Nicolas Cage movie, the only thing left to do is to be as dry as possible. And he does that so well. Like I think I almost like him doing that kind of role than Christopher Walken. Because he doesn't make it like twitchy. He's just very sort of like, it's almost like an American version of what Alan Rickman does a lot of times, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So William Fichtner is awesome in this. And what's Amber Heard? Who is she? Why do I know that?
She's been in a bunch of stuff. Zombieland.
Really?
Yeah.
As what?
A girl. I don't remember.
Anyway, she's I liked her in this. I thought.
Yeah, she had a lot of.
She was convincingly like hot girl who could like punch somebody in the face.
Right.
You know, which is hard to pull off.
When Twilight dad Billy Burke says, "I am going to kill you and then I'm going to defile your corpse." Her response is, "Oh yeah? Well, between now and then, I'm gonna F you up." And then she does.
Yes. There's a great in the RV.
I wrote down that whole exchange.
Well, that was a good one.
In my little moleskine here.
So it's, you know, I'll tell you, I am sick of seeing 3D movies at the Grove and at the Arclight because it's those, I don't know the technical term here, but it's those heavy red glasses that have the batteries in them. They weigh down on my nose.
There are batteries inside of them?
I think there are. That's what I was told.
God, it's going to give me a brain tumor.
I wear glasses 24/7. So, you know, I either got to put them on over my glasses or under them, and it never quite fits right either way. And they like press down on my nose, and I can't breathe right, and I got to hold them up with my hand for a while. I hate those.
I haven't noticed you doing that. That's funny.
It's like because they ride on the bridge. They like start clamping down. So it's like the opposite of what a Breathe Right strip does. So, yeah, I want real D with the little sunglassesy things. I don't want those stupid red goggles. They're the worst.
I just blanked on what I was going to say. One thing I did notice about this movie is that there was at least one, if not two or three, male distraction wigs going on on other characters. To pull your attention away
from Nicolas Cage,
sort of ongoing personal saga, you know, his own hair situation is so entertaining, you know, from movie to movie that, and part of me thinks that he is in on that joke now, and part of me thinks that he still wants to like pull it off somehow. Like he's not John Travolta, like which we are grateful for, because John Travolta wants you to think that he's got this, you know, virile head of manly hair when I think he just sprays it on.
Probably. And
but Cage has goofy hair in movie after movie after movie. And you know that it's not real or that it's some sort of strange
special effect.
Yeah. And so, I noticed that on other characters, these giant fake toupee sort of wigs on guys, And you'll notice we're not discussing Nicolas Cage's career here because I think
we started talking about it in the car and I was like, we should save this for the podcast.
I don't remember what we were talking about.
Because I do want to, because here's the thing. I mean, like Nicolas Cage at one point was like peer to Sean Penn in a way. You know, and I mean, yeah, Sean Penn.
And thank God he's not doing that
anymore.
Sean
Penn is kind of a gas bag, I grant you. But like he was an actor, you know, who acted.
Right, stuff.
And like, now he just wants to make goofy grindhouse movies. And it's like, usually actors will do their, you know, what they call their one for me, one for them, you know? Like, they'll do the projects.
Nobody does that.
Yeah, they do.
No.
Yes.
You think they do. They say they do, but then the track record always proves that they don't.
What do you mean?
Well, specifically, I'm thinking of an interview where I read Julianne Moore talking about that sort of thing.
Right.
And but look at what she makes. Look at what she winds up in. She winds up in a lot of garbage.
Yeah.
And occasionally winds up in something good.
The Kids Are All Right or something.
Yeah. Or Safe. Or okay. Like early in her career when she was only doing like little indie things and all of them were pretty darn good. You know?
Well, but even then she was doing like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. And she started in Soaps.
Which is awesome.
Nonetheless, it's not safe. You know what I'm saying? Right. Well, I think certain actors get to a certain level of popularity and it becomes, you know, five for them, one for me, right. Whatever. But
that's all agreed.
But all Nicolas Cage wants to do now are these goof-ass movies, and it's like
I'm in favor of this.
Yeah, but I just would like him to occasionally bother to do some acting. Just every so often.
Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Okay, well, you're right. Okay, there is that. I'll give you that one.
Which satisfied all the criteria for a Nicolas Cage movie. It was
both.
It was batshit crazy.
Right.
And
he acted.
He acted the hell out of it. And it's an amazing movie, like one of my favorite movies of that year. Mm-hmm. And I don't think enough people have given it that the attention it deserves.
Well, the problem is because he's become such a clown, everybody just, you know, people just assume that it was going to be another, you know, Bangkok Dangerous or Ghost Rider or
that
something.
Movie's brilliant. And I'm not just being like, it's not goofy fun. It's astoundingly good.
No, I'm sure it is. And I still need to see it. I haven't seen it, but.
I'm overpraising it by saying it's astoundingly good.
I did
good,
see
but,
Knowing, you know. I
mean, which is hilarious.
God.
It's got a big moose that's on fire.
That was unbearable, that movie. It was a deer on fire.
A deer, moose, whatever.
But I don't know. I just, okay, fine. I would like some.
I think we're past the point of jokes about his
career. No, I'm not joking.
He's chosen his path. And I think it's the right path for him. He has his Oscar.
Right.
And after he got his Oscar, he went off and he made garbage like Captain Corelli's Mandolin. And
was that after or before?
After the Oscar, he made garbage like Captain Corelli's Mandolin, these serious sort of Oscar season sort of movies that were poop. And I think that.
But how many of those?
A good handful. And then stuff like Con Air. And I think that stuff like Con Air kind of whet his appetite for, you know, trash.
Right.
And it wasn't quite trashy enough. And I think that you've seen him sort of move into the direction of the kind of things he wants to do, like Ghost Rider and Knowing and Next and Drive Angry and Kick-Ass and
he was good in Kick-Ass. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Really good in Kick-Ass.
I mean, I don't want him to make more Family Mans. Don't get me wrong.
Exactly.
But, you know.
Yeah, well, Family Man came after the Oscar, too.
Yeah.
And that was like a big, you know,
piece of
garbage.
Did you see The Weatherman? I heard that was actually okay.
It was all right.
And God of War?
God of War was cool.
Yeah.
And he was good at it.
And nobody saw it.
And no one saw it. Yeah. And so I am all in. I'm in favor. I'm on board for whatever ridiculous thing he wants to do next. He has gone from being an annoyance in movies like Family Man and Captain Corelli to being someone whose next move I anticipate with pleasure. Like, but I'm happy.
The weird thing, though, is like if you look at the history of Hollywood, you have actors who started out, you know, who like rose up to become A-listers for a while, and then their star falls, and then they wind up making like, you know, Italian westerns or, you know, being the one American in some Japanese monster movie or something, because that's the only gig they can get. Uh-huh. And it feels like Nicolas Cage.
Sorry, I'm not bored.
It feels like Nicolas Cage like chose that path.
He did.
You know,
I think he did
consciously. It's like I'm going straight to this, when, you know, do not pass go and do not collect $200.
I saw him at Comic-Con a couple years back with his son. Mm-hmm. They were talking about this comic book that they were working on together.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the projects that he, you know, is kind of into. And he's a super comic book nerdy guy.
Right.
And he has that. That's his taste. That's the taste that he has and stuff. And I think that to make weird, you know, grindhouse-like films like that are part of his. I think that's his aesthetic.
But, you know, here's the weird thing. Why hasn't he worked with Tarantino yet?
He was in one of the grindhouse trailers.
Yeah, well, the one that Rob Zombie directed. But I mean, Rob Zombie directed. But like Tarantino, I mean, and I'm not a big defender of him. There are certain films of his I like. But I think that he's sort of taken that love of B-movie, pulp, grindhousey stuff and tried to, in some way or other, kind of make chicken salad out of it, you know? Right. And like, I think if Cage wanted to make that step, like, that would just seem an obvious...
Maybe they just haven't found the right
project. The right project. Together. We'll have to just wait for that one.
Anyway, I think I'm generally pro Drive Angry. It's not great. It's not great. I had a really good time, and it's got all the nudity and violence and crazy sex and gore and stabbings and machetes
and cars, and
human femurs and cars and explosions and devils and human sacrifice and
William Fichtner
that you would want in a movie.
Yes, I will give you all those things.
Speaking of William Fichtner,
yes,
don't watch from beginning to end a movie called What's the Worst That Could Happen?
Oh, yeah. But, yes, I did this exact thing. TiVo it and fast-forward to his scenes.
His scenes. Because...
In fact, that's our DVD pick of the week.
Is it?
Why not?
I don't know.
You got anything else?
Actually, we didn't discuss it before, and I don't have a thing.
I didn't think about it
either. Don't watch the DVD, though, because then you have to fast-forward through the DVD. Put it in your TiVo or Netflix.
Through whatever method you want to get it.
Whatever way you can get it. Through it fast.
Skip all the scenes that William Fichtner is not in.
And then go to his parts. You have this awesome 10-minute movie of him being like this, the most badass, smarter than everybody else, stalking his way through this film as the most flamboyantly homosexual detective.
It's like
that you've ever
seen. It's like if you crossed Michael Greer in The Gay Deceivers and Columbo. It's an amazing character. It's so funny. So he's great. The movie's terrible, but he is amazing.
I remember when I saw that movie, I remember giving it a good review because
of him. Yeah.
And I remember walking out of it going, wow, that was great. And then I wrote the review and I was like, this movie's so funny and blah, blah, blah. Then everyone else. It's kind of like my I Am Number 4 experience. Or
Dave's in the ad, by the way.
Where I was like, we'll talk about that in a second. That I realized that the movie was actually just terrible. Plus, I had a cold and I was on NyQuil.
Ah, well, that'll do it.
But that William Fichtner was so awesome in it that it colored my whole perception of the rest of this garbagey movie. I'm in the newspaper ad for I Am Number 4. My very first newspaper ad.
Oh!
Ever.
Peter DeBruges is going to have to make you the quote whore shirt now.
No.
Yes.
No.
You've earned it.
No.
You're one of us now.
No, you know what? I didn't earn it because I didn't. They emailed me after I saw the movie and said, can we get a quote? And I ignored the email. I didn't even say no. I just ignored it. Mm-hmm. And now I realize I should have said no because what they did was they took the line that I wrote, which was specifically this. Can a cynically made entertainment product still be great fun to watch despite its manipulations? I vote yes. That was what I wrote. And here's what wound up in the ad. Great fun! Exclamation point.
Great fun to watch or just
great
fun?
No. Great fun! Exclamation point.
But
then later in the review, I said, you know, I was kind of on board for this. I realize it's like silly junk, but I was excited about all the fighting at the end. And by the end, I was like super into what happens next to them. And so bring on the sequel. I want more. Mm-hmm. Period. In the ad, after great fun, all caps, exclamation point. It now says, I want more, exclamation point, all caps. And I'm mortified, actually, because now... I am basically Maria Salas. Now, I am Peter Travers. I am whatever other blurb whore that is out there.
I've been quoted before. It's not the end of the world, but I have had this. I've been asked before.
And there's no making it go away.
I have been asked before to have stuff quoted, and when they showed me what they wanted to quote, I said no. Because like when I reviewed the movie.
Well, I'll know better now. Next time I'll just say no.
When I reviewed the movie, or ask them up front what they're going to put.
Yeah.
You know, because like I reviewed the movie My Life in Ruins, which is not a good movie, but I really like Nia Vardalos's lead performance in it. And
your Twitter pal,
Nia Vardalos. That's not relevant. She was funny in it. She was very charming. You liked her in that too.
What was is that the one? Poopy Cacas?
Poopy Cacas.
Duty Cacas?
Yeah, then Duty Cacas.
She's here's the thing about her. Even if the movie she's in is crap,
she's fun.
She's super winning and charming, yeah. And you're into her, totally. Even if you're not into the movie.
No, I agree.
And
that's basically what I said in my review. And one of the things I wrote was like, so why did I have such a good time at such a spectacularly middling movie, Neovartalos? And Fox Searchlight wanted to quote the term, quote the phrase, such a good time, exclamation point. And I said, no, you can't do that.
I will say this about that movie, though. I keep coming
you
back
still
to...
Laugh about
I still
Poopy
laugh about Poopy Cacas and Duty Cacas, because they're the names of two... The
Greeks.
They're the names of two Greek characters in this movie. I'm 7 years old.
God.
But every time she says
Poopy Cacas, it's funny.
She says Poopy Cacas in the movie, funny. And it made me laugh every time.
I admit. It's an easy laugh, but it works, you know.
Yeah.
So we're running out of time here. I don't know what to really share about the Spirit Awards. I went, because I was
went to the Independent Spirit Awards this afternoon.
I was on the documentary jury this year. Here's my thing about the Spirit Awards.
Did anybody famous sit at your table? Or were you just with some publicist people?
I was with other people who were on the jury. So you're a documentary film fan, R.J. Cutler, who was on the jury with me, was at my table.
What has R.J. Cutler made?
He co-directed,
that I should know.
He co-directed The War Room.
Oh, okay.
He did
great.
He did that Fox.
Our neighbor's dog is barking now.
He did that Fox series. Oh, he's a documentary fan. He did that Fox series, American High.
Okay.
He's done a bunch of stuff.
Our neighbor's annoying barking.
But here's my thing about the Spirit Awards. And I mean, I used to work at Film Independent. I've done two juries for them now. So, I mean, I think the organization's great, and they bring a lot of attention, you know, to, they help films get made, and they bring attention to films once they've been made. But the thing that bugs me about the Spirit Awards is that the membership votes, like there's a jury that picks what the nominees are going to be. Like there's one jury that does all the narrative films, all the American narrative films. There's the doc jury, there's a foreign film jury, and then there's other juries that do the grants. They watch all of these movies. They watch dozens and dozens and dozens of movies to finally narrow it down to five. And then when the five go out to the membership doesn't have to watch all five nominees to vote.
So they're just like every other group that gives an award to somebody.
Yeah,
and they vote. They vote for the easiest, safest thing.
Yeah,
that they
vote like they vote for the one that they saw.
The thing they like. The thing they saw.
So you can almost always pick who's going to win the Spirit Awards by looking at the box office. Basically, whatever the most popular movie is won. So that's why
didn't The King's Speech win for foreign film?
Well, yeah, because they include England for foreign. It's not foreign language film. It's foreign made film because this is about honoring American movies.
All right. I suppose.
So, but yeah, so like, so, you know.
What else was nominated, though?
So, for foreign film?
Yeah, do you remember?
Uncle Boon Me.
Oh, and that didn't win.
It did not win.
The incredibly, like,
which we'll
artful
be talk, which
Uncle
Boon
Me, a masterpiece.
Which we will talk about next week.
Didn't
when
win.
It opens. But yeah, again, but that's the thing. How many members actually watched Uncle Boon Me? And I know that if you're a member of Film Independent, they make these films available to you. They have screenings in L.A. They send out DVDs, they, you know, like the thing is you can watch them online via iTunes or something, but how many of them actually do it? Like, I watched all these documentaries, we sat in a room and hashed it out and came up with the five that we really loved. How many members watched all five documentaries? I'm going to say very few, you know. Exit Through the Gift Shop won,
but
and I love that movie, but I'm just guessing based on my knowledge of what wins at this thing and just sort of just from knowing
just
how people work.
Anecdotal information.
Exactly. Right. How many members actually watched, you know, Thunder Soul, which hasn't opened theatrically yet, but which is a great movie and which qualified. How many of them watched Marwan Call, you know? I think they all, you know, how many watched Sweetgrass, which is, you know, a mostly dialogue-free movie
almost
about
silent
sheep herding, which is gorgeous. I mean, I loved all five of the nominees. I was happy with the five films we came up with. I don't disown any of them, but I just know
that. Yeah, because Exit Through the Gift Shop is a really cool movie.
Yeah, it's terrific. Yeah. Nothing against that film at all, but that's not the point I'm trying to make. But I just know that, like, very few people probably made it a point to watch all five of those documentaries or all five of the, or all, you know, six of the acting performances or, you know, in the, some categories had five, some had six. I guess they maybe had some ties or something. Like, the best actress category, it was the first year that all five actresses who were up for an Oscar are also up for a Spirit Award. But then the Spirit Awards had a sixth Best Actress nominee, which is Greta Gerwig in Greenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Who, of course, lost to Natalie Portman in Black Swan. Anyway, so that's my only thing about the Spirit Awards. Beyond that, though, it's a fun event. It was chilly this year. It was like storming in LA last night. I was thinking, oh my God, the tent's going to get washed away. But it, you know, the skies were clear. We had nice weather. It was just, it was cold. Everybody in the tent was cold. Like, if you watch the show on IFC,
did you have any lamps or stuff in
there? Were some, but not enough. Like, you know, women at my table were chilly. And like, if you watch the show on IFC, like, presenters come out and they go, oh my God, it's cold in here, you know. So that was kind of crazy. But
were you cold? You wore a nice sweater.
I was okay. Yeah. And, you know, Joel McHale hosted and he had some funny stuff. And there's a funny taped bit at the beginning where he gets his arm stuck into a boulder in his dressing room.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a fun show. And I was very happy to do the Doctor again this year. And, you know, hope they have me back.
Me too. I hope they have you back too.
Yes.
Because it's great when you just go away for an afternoon. Yeah.
It's great for me too. So this wraps up our first episode of this week. We are going to do an Oscar special.
Yes, we are.
And we're going to tape it Monday morning, and so it's going to go up sometime on Monday.
And then we can finally be done talking about the Oscars. Yes. I've been on the radio 7 or 8 times in the past few days talking about the Oscars. And I'm tired. Yeah,
I get less interested in the Oscars every year and then wind up having to talk about them
more. I'm not tired of promoting movies.com on the radio. I'm very happy and pleased to do that. But oh man.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of talking about the Oscars.
The King's Speech. Social Network.
Everyone just loves the King's Speech. Natalie Portman. So great. That Black Swan sure is a crazy movie.
So we're going to talk about it and then we'll be done with it. And we'll all be done with this year's Oscars.
Right.
So thank you for joining us. We have not done shout outs to our other podcasts.
Oh, who cares about them?
I just want to.
Do they shout us out?
Some of them do.
When? Who?
Dennis and Tony. Dennis and Tony on the Comedy Couch with Dennis and Tony.
Did they?
Plugged our show.
They did. Yes, good for them. Thank you, Dennis and Tony.
They enjoy the show.
It's about time.
Tony said he didn't like the title, but you know, well, that's his problem.
Tony doesn't like our title?
Yes.
Why?
He doesn't think it's catchy. I don't know.
It is totally catchy. Linoleum Knife is totally catchy. That's his beef with it. It's not catchy.
I don't know. You'll have to ask Tony. He didn't love the title. But apart from that, he enjoys the show.
He's wrong.
Gray Drake and the Popcorn Mafia.
She's fantastic.
A terrific show. Blowhard from our friend Malcolm Ingram. And
he's in Canada right now,
yeah, but
right?
He's still taping episodes.
Up there?
Mm-hmm.
Like with his mom?
He's doing one with his mom soon.
She doesn't ask him penis questions like Smith does.
No, though. But they're about to have a whole... They're going to do a live podcast of him and his mom, and they're going to talk about his porn movie.
With his mom.
Yeah.
His mom's going to be there while they talk about the porn.
No, he and his mom is going to... That's the show. Him and his mom talking about his porn movie. So tune in for
that.
I'll
listen to that.
That's what you're going to want to hear.
I'll listen to that.
And sadly, the IFC podcast is no more, or at least at the moment, it's temporarily gone because Alison Wilmore is not there anymore, which kind of sucks because that was a really great show. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I actually forgot to look tonight.
A name that we put a lot of thought into, by the way. The title of the name of the show.
Anyway, I forgot to look in the mailbox.
What does Tony Tripoli know anyway?
God, let it go. linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line. And you can, we have a Twitter feed now, too.
We do?
Yes, linoleumcast.
Linoleumcast.
Yes.
Oh,
at
nice.
Linoleumcast.
Well, how do we post on that? Is that just you? You post on it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get onto it and do it.
I can show you how if you want.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I've got a lot of things to say.
I'm sure you do.
I have a lot of important things to say.
Then I will give you access. So,
my first tweet is going to be Nicolas Cage is the honey badger.
And if that doesn't make sense, you Google it. All right. So thanks for joining us. We will talk to you after the Oscars and catch you next time.
The honey badger.
Thanks for listening. Bye.